Welcome. You're listening to Hope on the Hill, an audio tour of the Stephen and Harriet Myers residence. Your tour will be narrated by Mary Liz Stewart and Paul Stewart, co-founders of the Underground Railroad History Project of the Capital Region and scholars in residence at Russell Sage College. This audio tour takes you through this remarkable residence and hopefully will help transport you back in time as if you are standing alongside Stephen and Harriet as they help make history. To guide you during the tour, you will hear an audio cue like this one, followed by short directions on where to go. You may press pause on the player as you make your way to the next location. So, let's begin. Please make your way to the sidewalk in front of the Stephen and Harriet Myers residence.
This is the neighborhood that's called Arbor Hill in the city of Albany, capital of New York State. In its heyday, you know, its earlier days, very vibrant, lively community, lots of businesses, middle-class residents lived here. It was an integrated neighborhood. The community has suffered a lot of disinvestment and flight to the suburbs, but it has remained strong over the years and lots of rich history and an exciting place to be. Where we are located right now, where we're standing in the mid-1850s, really was, as I say, near the edges of the city of Albany. It was not paved. There were no cobblestones at that point. It still was a dirt road and lots more trees than what we see today. We would have heard horses, you know, horse hooves up and down the street. There would have been carts. People would have either used carts for movement of business materials. They would have used wagons to transport themselves. A lot of people walked. A lot of conversations among people as they passed each other on the street and carried on their, you know, conversations and, as we might do today. We're standing in front of 194 Livingston Avenue, a very special place, a treasure. It actually is the street address for the Stephen and Harriet Myers residence, which is a documented Underground Railroad site. When freedom seekers came to the city of Albany, many of them would be directed to this building, knowing that Stephen and Harriet Myers lived here and conducted Underground Railroad activities here in this building.
One of the things that has been a growing element in terms of our understanding of the Underground Railroad story is the story as it is, as it kind of emerges to us out of the experience of the people that we've been looking at here. For Stephen and Harriet Myers, we're talking about African Americans who were activists on the Underground Railroad.
Please walk to the base of the stairs at the front door. You are about to enter the residence.
When standing and looking at this building, it really has come back to life through the restoration process. All the bricks have been washed and restored where they've needed to be replaced. They've been replaced with 1850s brick, which is what was used in the original building. It's a three-story brick building with a full basement. It contains Greek Revival architectural features. The windows themselves are all historically designed now. All the glass panes are historic. The front door to the building is historically designed now also, and the window panes and transom that surround the door are all part of the historic character, so that when we look at this building now, we're really looking at it and seeing the building as it looked when Stephen and Harriet Myers lived here in the mid-1850s. What we understand is that when Stephen and Harriet Myers lived in this building with their four children, that freedom seekers would walk up the eight front steps and knock on that front door, and they would be welcomed in as guests in this household.
When someone comes here, they can really find it as a place of refuge, not a place of hiding. Those are important elements in what was happening for the people here. Welcoming people into their home, giving them a place to stay, helping them with food, clothing, shelter, medical help, legal help if necessary, to be able to make their way to a place of freedom.
Please walk carefully up the stairs and enter the residence. You will be standing in the foyer.
We're standing in what we call the foyer of the Stephen and Harriet Myers residence. It runs the full length of the building, front to back. We're actually looking at a stairway that goes up to the second and third floor, and then also the stairway down to what is the basement level. Oftentimes, freedom seekers would carry letters of reference with them from someone else who had directed them here.
Yes, ma'am. Nice to meet you. Here are my papers.
Which was important because the abolitionists were often functioning on shoestring budgets. So they needed to be sure that whatever provisions they were providing for folks were definitely in, you know, they were folks in definite need.
Please walk through the archway to enter the front parlor.
Guests would be welcomed into the front parlor in a home. The back parlor is what would have been used for family gatherings. So when the freedom seekers would be welcomed into the building by Harriet Myers, they would have been welcomed into the front parlor. We have no visual records of how each of these rooms was decorated, but based upon what we've learned from research about his furnishings that would have been in a building in the mid-1850s, it's likely that there would have been a large, rather firm couch, perhaps an 8-foot couch in this room. There would have been a fireplace here. The building was heated through, actually not through the use of the fireplace, but through stoves. So we would have seen a cast iron stove as we walked in this room. And it would have vented up through the fireplace and chimneys that are in the front and back parlors. We also very likely would have seen a wooden table, perhaps centered in this room, something usually square, not very decorative, because what we understand is that, you know, Stephen and Harriet Myers were not people who necessarily would have been interested in sort of the most recent state-of-the-art furniture, but they would have had things from prior dwellings and such. There would have been certainly window coverings. We understand that at the time period there would have been pull-down shades, probably with tassels on them, perhaps made out of linen, and then some sort of fabric draperies as well. And certainly those would be very reasonably used as a way to manage the temperature within the building as well. Vigilance committee meetings would have been held in this front parlor.
Vigilance committees were these groups of people who had come together for the purpose of providing help to those who had escaped from enslavement and who were making their way to freedom. Food, clothing, shelter, medical care, legal help would be made available to them and to help them on their way, and also to watch for those who would be trying to catch them to thwart their purposes. And then in the 1850s, Stephen Myers is a key figure in the Vigilance Committee. Stephen certainly was a person of great character. He was enslaved, grew up in the Capital Region in Rensselaer County and then over here at Albany County. He was very interested in education, both in terms of publishing the newspaper, but also in terms of working with schools. So he was a person who really put himself on the line in terms of what he believed in. We're actually in the room where the Vigilance Committee met at least once, probably more than once, and they would do things like think about, you know, well, how do we raise money to be able to help the folks that are coming through? What are some of the things that might be impacting on them, like the Fugitive Slave Law or later on the Dred Scott decision? These are the political things that were happening that the Vigilance Committee certainly had to think about.
Please make your way through the archway to the back parlor.
The back parlor is what would have been used for family gatherings. Stephen and Harriet Myers had 4 children. They actually did have 5 children, though one died shortly after childbirth. 2 daughters and 2 sons. So we had Stephen Jr., Catherine, Harriet, and then Abram. Knowing something of how people and families interacted in that this mid-19th century time period, I would imagine that as a family space, that back parlor could very well have been used for some educational purposes. I can imagine Harriet sort of gathering the children together after tasks were completed and conducting some what today we might call homeschooling activities. And I suspect as well that they may have also used that space for what I would imagine would be repairing clothing, for instance. So I can just imagine Harriet again with the children being gathered in the back parlor, and with needle and thread in hand, she would, I'm sure, instruct the children in the proper way to repair clothing items or other household fabric goods that they had. And so it would become both, again, a learning opportunity, but also a way to contribute to maintaining, you know, the goods that the family had. The wall surfaces that we're looking at, where we see brick, which to us today may seem attractive, in Stephen and Harriet Meyer's day in the 1850s would have been anathema, because it was associated with barns and outbuildings. And so all the walls would have been plaster covered, and then they would have been painted. The windows, as they are designed now, as we look at them, this is how they looked when Stephen and Harriet were here. In fact, we're standing on the original floorboards as well. This is where Stephen and Harriet stood.
You may now exit the back parlor and take the stairs down to the kitchen and dining area. Please take extra care, as the original stairway is quite narrow.
We're standing in a hallway that is below the first floor foyer. Again, we have two doorways that enter into a front room in what we call the basement, and then a back room that we also call the basement. There are doors at this level that access the outside. And our understanding is that it was very commonplace for what's called a kitchen garden to have been in the backyard, so that food plants and perhaps even decorative plants would have been accessible in the backyard near the house. And beyond that, we would have had some yard space, but then there also would have been buildings over on the neighboring street, which is Third Street.
Please enter the front room. You will be standing in the dining area.
This would have been the dining area, because this would have been the room that guests would have accessed easily from the stairway from the first floor. So this room would have been the place where people would have eaten. There's certainly, again, some architectural features still in place. There are two shallow spaces. One is wide open at this point with no door frame or door. On the left of what would have been the fireplace, but on the right of the fireplace, there is still very nicely for us a historic door. So it's the original door from the building with door frame and wainscoting around it. And it's always intriguing to contemporary visitors because it's very, very shallow. But this was a time period when people had certainly very decorative dinnerware. We found artifacts from dug up from archaeological digs in the backyard of the Myers residence. By the presence of these architectural artifacts, we would maintain that Harriet had a very nice set of dinnerware that she would have held in these cupboards, but certainly different from us.
Harriet is a very sharp and intelligent woman who is described in her obituary as being a great reader of books and a reader of men, being up to date on all the issues of the day as much as anybody else. Certainly a person who was of great hospitality in terms of assisting people and welcoming people in her home, but also a person with some degree of education as well. She's described as being a person that worked together with Stephen on the newspapers and proofreading the newspaper so to make sure that it was organized correctly and whatnot.
By so doing, she really was breaking a number of cultural laws of that time period, because it was very unacceptable for women to do these kinds of things, both to engage in, certainly to engage in supporting and working with and supporting freedom seekers as she was doing, but then also to go out into the community publicly and seek out support to provide for these freedom seekers. Women were that standard, hearth and home sort of thing, family and was the focus. And so really she was really refusing to be bound by sort of the cultural expectations that were applied to women in this period.
Please make your way to the back room. You'll be standing in the kitchen.
The back room, which would have been the kitchen area when Harriet and Stephen lived here, again, that cast iron stove that would have sat in front of the fireplace and vented up the chimneys, would have been sitting here. And again, it's a shallow closet, no door on this particular closet area. There is a nice door frame still, which is again important part of the architectural analysis of what was in this building when it was built. So the door frame is original, no door in that space, but again, it is a shallow closet that would have housed, cooking utensils and implements that would have been used.
Please exit the kitchen and take the stairs all the way to the second floor. When you reach the second floor, head down the hall towards the front of the residence.
As we continue on to the second floor, we again have a front room and a back room. These would likely have been bedrooms. They may have been, perhaps one may have been used as a, perhaps as a study. Again, exactly how they were used when Stephen and Harriet lived here is a little bit uncertain. So we continue to research to determine what we can. Access to both the front and the back rooms on the second floor allow us to walk through, again, doorway arches that are original. Our suspicion is that these would have been family bedrooms. The front room actually has a small storage closet and a larger closet area. Some people have suggested to us that it may have been a dressing room, but it also could have been a room that would have been an infant's room, for instance, right off the parent room.
It's time to head to the third and final floor. Please take the stairway up. Again, please step carefully. At the top of the stairway, please walk down the hallway towards the front of the residence.
We actually have four small rooms. We pass down the hallway. We just passed the first room. The hallway is L-shaped here, so we have second room, original floor planks, and original door. We continue down the small hallway, and then we have a room facing, a third room facing the front of the building, facing Livingston Avenue. And then we also have a room that is the fourth room on this floor facing the backyard of the Myers residence. It is believed that these would have been rooms that the children of Stephen and Harriet Myers would have used. Freedom seekers likely would have been provided accommodations up here if they chose to stay here for a period of time.
We do know of some records from New York City which suggest that some 50 freedom seekers were referred to this address during that time period that the Myers were here.
It averages one person a day across a 10-month period. So that gives us some suggestion. Certainly the work that the Myers did, they did wherever they lived. And so while they were here, certainly they engaged in their Underground Railroad activities and their activism, but they carried that work with them wherever they were living in the city of Albany. For us, what's interesting is that for the people who did own this home after history moved on, none of the individuals who owned the home or lived here, as there were some tenants here as well, they did not have knowledge of the history.
The story that unfolds is a little bit different than the myth that we've sort of built up around the Underground Railroad story in many ways, with its links as part of the abolition movement. The Underground Railroad is really the first civil rights movement in the country. We understand that it's really a story about people, not just simply about safe houses, that how we talk about it and how we remember it is very important, and that there's a connection from the past to the present. This building also is a beacon of hope. It can be much more central to the experience of people learning about the story of the Underground Railroad, getting inspiration about the story.
We hope you have enjoyed Hope on the Hill, an audio tour of the Stephen and Harriet Myers residence. If you would like to support this important part of history, please see our website at undergroundrailroadhistory.org. Thank you.